The roads were deserted, like we were driving through a ghost town. The disciplinary committee meeting was scheduled for 5 o'clock sharp, and we were going to be right on time. The meeting was in the gym, because it was the only place at Jackson big enough to accommodate the number of people that were likely to show up. That was another thing about Gatlin. Everything that went on involved everyone. There were no closed proceedings around here. From the look of the streets, the whole town had all but shut down, which meant just about everyone was going to be at the meeting.
"I just don't know how your mom pulled this off so quickly. This is fast, even for her."
"From what I overheard, Doc Asher got involved. He hunts with Principal Harper and some bigwig on the school board."
Doc Asher was Emily's dad and the only real doctor in town.
"Great.
You guys know I'm probably going to get kicked out, right? I'll bet it's already been decided. This meeting is just for show." Link looked confused.
"They can't kick you out without hearing your side of the story. You didn't even do anything."
"None of that matters. These things are decided behind closed doors. Nothing I say is going to matter." She was right, and we both knew it. So I didn't say anything. Instead, I pulled her hand up to my mouth and kissed it, wishing for the 100th time that it was me going up against the whole school board instead of Lena. But the thing was, it would never have been me. No matter what I did, no matter what I said, I would always be one of them. Lena never would. And I think that was the thing that made me the angriest and the most embarrassed. I hated them even more because deep down, they still claimed me as one of their own. Even when I dated Old Man Ravenwood's niece and took on Mrs. Lincoln and wasn't invited to Savannah Snow's parties, I was one of them. I belonged to them. And there was nothing I could do to change that. And if the opposite were true, and in some way they belonged to me, then what Lena was up against wasn't just them. It was me. The truth was killing me. Maybe Lena was going to be claimed on her 16th birthday, but I had been claimed since birth. I had no more control over my fate than she did. Maybe none of us did. I pulled the car into the parking lot. It was full. There was a crowd of people lined up at the main entrance, waiting to get in. I hadn't seen this many people in one place since the opening of Gods and Generals, the longest and most boring Civil War movie ever made, and one that half my relatives starred in as extras because they owned their own uniforms. Link ducked down in the back seat.
"I'm gonna slide out here. I'll see y'all in there."
He pushed open the door and crawled out between the cars.
"Good luck."
Lena's hands were in her lap, shaking. It killed me to see her this nervous.
"You don't have to go in there. We can turn around and I can drive you right back to your house."
"No, I'm going in."
"Why do you want to subject yourself to this? You said it yourself, this is probably just for show."
"I'm not going to let them think I'm scared to face them. I left my last school, but I'm not going to run away this time." She took a deep breath.
"It's not running away."
"It is to me."
"Is your uncle coming at least?"
"He can't."
"Why the hell not?"
She was all alone in this, even though I was standing right next to her. "It's too early. I didn't even tell him."
"Too early? What is that about, anyway? Is he locked up in his crypt or something?"
"More like, or something." It wasn't worth trying to talk about now. She was going to have enough to deal with in a few minutes. We walked toward the building. It started to rain. I looked at her.
"Believe me, I'm trying. If I let go, it would be a tornado."
People were staring, even pointing. Not that I was surprised. So much for common decency. I looked around, half expecting to see Boo Radley sitting by the door,
But tonight, he was nowhere in sight. We entered the gym from the side, coincidentally, the visitor's entrance, Link's idea, which turned out to be a good one. Because once we got inside, I realized people weren't standing out front waiting to get in. They were just hoping to hear the meeting. Inside, it was standing room only. It looked like a pathetic version of a grand jury hearing from an episode of one of those courtroom dramas on TV. There was a big plastic folding table in the front of the room, and a few teachers, Mr. Lee, of course, sporting a red bow tie and his own backwoods brand of prejudice, Principal Harper, and a couple of people who must have been members of the school board, sitting in a row at the tables. They all looked old and annoyed, like they wished they could be at home watching QVC or religious programming. The bleachers were filled with Gatlin's finest. Mrs. Lincoln and her D.A.R. lynch mob were taking up the first three rows, with the members of the Sisters of the Confederacy, the First Methodist Choir, and the Historical Society taking up the next few. Right behind them were the Jackson Angels, also known as the girls who wanted to be Emily and Savannah, and the guys who wanted to get into Emily's and Savannah's pants, sporting their freshly screened Guardian tees. The front of the shirts had a picture of an angel that looked suspiciously like Emily Asher, with her huge white angel wings spread wide open, wearing, what else, a Jackson High Wildcats t-shirt. On the back, there was simply a pair of white wings, designed to look like they were sprouting right out of the person's back, and the angel's battle cry, "We'll be watching you." Emily was sitting next to Mrs. Asher, her leg and its huge cast propped up on one of the orange cafeteria chairs. Mrs. Lincoln narrowed her eyes when she saw us, and Mrs. Asher put her arm around Emily protectively, as if one of us might run over there and beat her with a club like a defenseless baby seal pup. I saw Emily slip her phone out of her tiny silver bag, text ready. Soon her fingers would be flying. Our school gym was probably the epicenter of local gossip for four counties tonight. Amma was sitting a few rows back, fiddling with the charm around her neck. Hopefully it would make Mrs. Lincoln grow the horns she'd been so artfully hiding all these years. Of course, my dad wasn't there, but the sisters were sitting next to Thelma, across the aisle from Amma. Things must have been worse than I thought. The sisters hadn't been out of the house this late since 1980, when Aunt Grace ate too much spicy Hoppin' John and thought she was having a heart attack. Aunt Mercy caught my eye and waved her handkerchief. I walked Lena to the seat in the front of the room obviously reserved for her. It was right in front of the firing squad, dead center.
"It's going to be okay. Promise?"
I could hear the rain pounding on the roof outside.
"I promise this doesn't matter. I promise these people are idiots. I promise nothing they say will ever change the way I feel about you. I'll take that as a no."
The rain beat down harder on the roof. Not a good sign. I took her hand and pressed something into it. The little silver button from Lena's vest that I'd found in the beater's cracked upholstery the night we met in the rain. It looked like a piece of junk, but I had carried it in my jeans pocket ever since.
"Here, it's sort of a good luck charm. At least it brought something good to me."
I could see how hard she was trying not to crack. Without a word, Lena took off her chain and added it to her own collection of valuable junk.
"Thanks."
If she could have smiled, she would have. I made my way back toward the row where the sisters and Amma were sitting. Aunt Grace stood up, resting on her cane.
"Ethan, over here. We saved you a seat, darling. Why don't you sit down, Grace Statham?"
an old blue-haired woman sitting behind the sisters hissed. Aunt Prue turned around.
Why don't you mind your own business, Sadie Honeycutt, or I will mind it for you?
Aunt Grace turned to Mrs. Honeycutt and smiled.
Now you come right on over here, Ethan.
I squeezed in between Aunt Mercy and Aunt Grace. How you holding up, sweet meat? Thelma smiled and pinched my arm. Thunder crashed outside, and the lights flickered. A few old women gasped. An uptight-looking guy sitting in the middle of the big folding table cleared his throat.
Just a little hiccup in the power is all. Why doesn't everyone kindly take their seats so we can get started? My name is Bertrand Hollingsworth, and I'm head of the school board. This meeting's been called to respond to the petition requesting the expulsion of a Jackson student, a Miss Lena Duquesne. Is that right?
Principal Harper addressed Mr. Hollingsworth from his seat at the table, the prosecution, or more accurately, Mrs. Lincoln's hangman.
Yes, sir. The petition was brought to my attention by several concerned parents, and it was signed by over 200 of Gatlin's most respected parents and citizens, and a number of Jackson's students.
Of course it was.
What are the grounds for expulsion?
Mr. Harper flipped some pages on his yellow legal pad like he was reading a rap sheet.
Assault, destruction of school property, and Miss Duquesne was already on probation.
Assault? I didn't assault anyone. It's just an accusation. They can't prove anything.
I was on my feet before he even finished.
None of that's true.
Another jumpy-looking guy at the other end of the table raised his voice to be heard over the rain and the 20 or 30 old women whispering about my bad manners.
Young man, have a seat. This is not a free-for-all.
Mr. Hollingsworth pressed on over the din.
Do we have any witnesses to substantiate these accusations?
Now there were more than a few people whispering to each other to see if anyone knew what substantiate meant. Principal Harper cleared his throat awkwardly.
Yes, and recently I received information that indicates Miss Duquesne had similar problems at the school she previously attended.
What is he talking about? How do they know anything about my old school?
I don't know. What happened at your old school?
Nothing.
A woman from the school board flipped through some papers in front of her.
I think we'd like to hear from Jackson's parent partnership president, Mrs. Lincoln, first.
Link's mom stood up dramatically and walked down the aisle toward the Gatlin grand jury. She had seen a few courtroom dramas on TV herself.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Mrs. Lincoln, can you tell us what you know about this situation, since you are one of the original petitioners?
Of course. Miss Ravenwood, I mean Miss Duquesne, moved here several months ago, and since then there have been all sorts of problems at Jackson. First she broke a window in the English class
that came close to cutting my baby to shreds.
Mrs. Snow called out.
It came close to seriously injuring several children, and many of them suffered cuts from the broken glass.
No one except Lena was injured, and that was an accident,
Link yelled from where he was standing in the back of the room.
Wesley Jefferson Lincoln, you better go home right now if you know what's good for you,
Mrs. Lincoln hissed. She regained her composure, smoothing her skirt, and turned to face the disciplinary committee.
Miss Duquesne's charm seemed to work quite well on the weaker sex,
Mrs. Lincoln said with a smile.
As I was saying, She broke a window in the English classroom, which frightened the students so much that a number of civically minded young ladies took it upon themselves to form the Jackson Guardian Angels, a group whose sole purpose is to protect the students at Jackson, like a neighborhood watch.
The fallen angels nodded in unison from their seats on the bleachers, like someone was pulling invisible strings attached to their heads, which, in a way, someone was. Mr. Hollingsworth was scribbling on a yellow legal pad.
Was this the only incident involving Miss Duquesne?
Mrs. Lincoln tried to look shocked.
Heavens, no. At the winter formal, she pulled the fire alarm, ruining the dance and destroying $4,000 worth of audio equipment. As if that weren't enough, she pushed Miss Asher off of the stage, causing her to break her leg, which I've been told, on good authority, will take months to heal.
Lena stared straight ahead, refusing to look at anyone.
Thank you, Mrs. Lincoln.
Link's mom turned and smiled at Lena. Not a genuine smile or even a sarcastic smile, but an I'm-going-to-ruin-your-life-and-enjoy-doing-it smile. Mrs. Lincoln walked back to her seat. Then she stopped and looked right at Lena.
I almost forgot. There is one last thing.
She pulled some loose papers from her purse.
I have records from Miss Duquesne's previous school in Virginia, although it might be more accurate to call it an institution.
I wasn't in an institution. It was a private school.
As Principal Harper mentioned, this is not the first time Miss Duquesne has had violent episodes.
Lena's voice in my head was bordering on hysterical. I tried to reassure her.
Don't worry.
But I was worried. Mrs. Lincoln wouldn't be saying this here if she couldn't prove it somehow.
Miss Duquesne is a very disturbed girl. She suffers from a mental illness. Let me see.
Mrs. Lincoln ran her finger down the page as if she was looking for something. I waited to hear the diagnosis for the mental illness Mrs. Lincoln thought Lena suffered from, the state of being different.
Ah, yes, here it is. It appears Miss Duquesne suffers from bipolar disorder, which Dr. Asher can tell you is a very serious mental condition. These people who suffer from this affliction are prone to violence and unpredictable behavior. These things run in families. Her mother was afflicted as well.
This can't be happening. The rain hammered down on the roof. The wind picked up, lashing the door of the gym.
In fact, her mother murdered her father 14 years ago.
The entire room gasped. Game, set, match. Everyone started talking at once.
Ladies and gentlemen, please.
Principal Harper tried to calm everyone down, but it was like taking a match to dry brush. Once the fire got started, there was no stopping it. It took 10 minutes for the gym to settle back down again, but Lena never did. I could feel her heart racing like it was my own, and the knot in her throat from choking back her tears. Although judging by the downpour outside, she was having a tough time with that. I was surprised she hadn't run out of the gym already, but she was either too brave or too stunned to move. I knew Mrs. Lincoln was lying. I didn't believe Lena had been in an institution any more than I believed the angels wanted to protect the students at Jackson. What I didn't know was if Mrs. Lincoln was lying about the rest, the part about Lena's mother murdering her father. but I knew I wanted to kill Mrs. Lincoln. I'd known Link's mom my whole life, but lately I hadn't even been able to think of her like that anymore. She didn't seem like the woman who ripped the cable box out of the wall or lectured us for hours on the virtues of abstinence. This didn't seem like one of her annoying yet ultimately innocent causes. This seemed more vindictive and more personal. I just couldn't figure out why she hated Lena so much. Mr. Hollingsworth tried to regain control.
All right, everyone, let's settle down. Mrs. Lincoln, thank you for taking the time to be here tonight. I'd like to review those documents, if you don't mind.
I stood up again.
This whole thing is ridiculous. Why don't you just set her on fire and see if she burns?
Mr. Hollingsworth tried to gain control of the meeting, which was bordering on becoming an episode of Jerry Springer.
Mr. Waite, have a seat or you will be asked to leave. There will be no more outbursts during this meeting. I have reviewed the witnesses' written accounts of what happened, and it seems this matter is quite straightforward, and there is only one sensible thing to do.
There was a crash, and the huge metal doors in the back of the room flew open. A gust of wind blew in, along with sheets of rain. And something else. Macon Ravenwood strode casually into the gym, dressed in a black cashmere overcoat and sharp-looking gray pinstripe suit, with Marion Ashcroft on his arm. Marion was carrying a small, checkered umbrella just large enough to shield her from the downpour. Macon didn't have an umbrella, but he was still bone dry. Boo lumbered in behind them, his black hair wet and standing on end, making it obvious he was more wolf than dog. Lena turned around in her orange plastic chair, and for a second, she looked as vulnerable as she felt. I could see the relief in her eyes, and I could see how hard she was trying to stay in her seat to keep from throwing herself sobbing into his arms. Macon's eyes flickered in her direction, and she settled back in her chair. He walked down the aisle toward the members of the school board.
I'm so sorry we are late. The weather is just treacherous out there tonight. Don't let me interrupt. You were just about to do something sensible, if I heard correctly.
Mr. Hollingsworth looked confused. Actually, most of the people in the gym looked confused. None of them had ever seen Macon Ravenwood in the flesh.
Excuse me, sir. I don't know who you think you are, but we are in the middle of proceedings, and you can't bring that dog in here. Only service animals are permitted on school grounds.
I understand completely. It just so happens that Boo Radley is my seeing eye dog.
I couldn't help but smile. I guess, technically, that was true. Boo shook his huge body, water from his soaking wet fur showering everyone sitting close to the aisle.
Well, Mr. Ravenwood. Macon Ravenwood.
There was another audible gasp from the bleachers, followed by the buzz of whispering moving down the rows. The whole town had been waiting for this day since before I was born. You could feel the energy in the room pick up from the sheer spectacle of it all. There was nothing, nothing Gatlin loved better than a spectacle.
Ladies and gentlemen of Gatlin, how nice to finally meet you all. I trust you know my dear friend, the beautiful Dr. Ashcroft. She has been kind enough to escort me this evening, as I don't quite know my way around our fair town.
Marion waved.
Let me apologize once again for being late. Please, do continue. I'm sure you were just about to explain that the accusations against my niece are completely unfounded and encourage these children to go home and get a good night's sleep for school tomorrow.
For a minute, Mr. Hollingsworth looked like he might be convinced to do just that, and I wondered if maybe Uncle Macon had the same power of persuasion Ridley possessed. A woman with a beehive whispered something to Mr. Hollingsworth, and he seemed to remember his original train of thought.
"No, sir. That's not what I was about to do, not at all. In fact, the accusations against your niece are quite serious. It seems there are several witnesses to the events that transpired. Based on the written accounts and the information presented at this meeting, I'm afraid we are faced with no choice but to expel her."
Macon waved his hand toward Emily, Savannah, Charlotte, and Eden.
"Are these your witnesses? An imaginative band of little girls suffering from a bad case of sour grapes?"
Mrs. Snow leapt to her feet.
"Are you insinuating that my daughter is lying?"
Macon smiled his movie star smile.
"Not at all, my dear. I'm saying that your daughter is lying. I'm sure you can appreciate the difference."
"How dare you?"
Link's mother pounced like a wildcat.
"You have no right to be here, railroading these proceedings."
Marion smiled and stepped forward. "As the great man said, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And I see no justice in this room, Mrs. Lincoln."
"Don't you talk your Harvard talk around here."
Marion snapped her umbrella shut. "I don't believe Martin Luther King Jr. went to Harvard." Mr. Hollingsworth spoke up authoritatively.
"The fact remains that according to witnesses, Miss Duquesne pulled the fire alarm, resulting in thousands of dollars in damages to Jackson High School property, and pushed Miss Asher off the stage, resulting in injuries to Miss Asher. Based on these events alone, we have grounds to expel her."
Marion sighed loudly, snapping her umbrella shut. "It is difficult to free fools from the chains they revere." She looked pointedly at Mrs. Lincoln. "Voltaire, another man who did not go to Harvard." Macon remained calm, which seemed to aggravate everyone even more.
"Mr. Hollingsworth. Mr. Hollingsworth. It would be a shame for you to continue on this course of action. You see, it's illegal to prevent a minor from attending school in the great state of South Carolina. Education is compulsory. That means required. You cannot dismiss an innocent girl from school without grounds. Those days are over, even in the South."
"As I have explained, Mr. Ravenwood, we do have grounds, and we are well within our power to expel your niece."
Mrs. Lincoln jumped to her feet.
"You can't just show up here out of the blue, interfering with town business. You haven't left your house in years. What gives you the right to have a say in what happens in this town or with our children?"
"Are you referring to your little collection of marionettes, dressed like, what is it, unicorns? You'll have to forgive my poor eyesight."
Macon gestured toward the angels.
"They are angels, Mr. Ravenwood, not unicorns. Not that I expect you to recognize our Lord's messengers, since I don't ever recall seeing you in church."
"Let he who is without sin cast the first stone, Mrs. Lincoln."
Macon paused for a second, as if he thought Mrs. Lincoln might need a moment or two to get her mind around that.
"As for your original point, you're absolutely right, Mrs. Lincoln. I spend a great deal of time in my house, which I don't mind. It's an enchanting place, really. But perhaps I should spend more time in town. Spend some more time with all of you. Shake things up a bit, for lack of a better expression."
Mrs. Lincoln looked horrified, and the DAR members were turning around in their seats, looking at one another nervously at the thought of it.
"In fact, If Lena will not be returning to Jackson, she will have to be homeschooled. Perhaps I should invite a few of her cousins to stay with me as well. I wouldn't want her to miss out on the social aspect of her education. Some of her cousins are quite captivating. In fact, I believe you met one of them at your little Midwinter's Eve masquerade ball. It wasn't a masquerade ball. My apologies. I only assumed those dresses were costumes, based on the garish nature of the plumage. Mrs. Lincoln reddened. She was no longer just a woman trying to ban books. This was not a woman to be messed with. I was worried for Macon. I was worried for all of us.
Let's be honest, Mr. Ravenwood. You have no place in this town. You are not part of it, and clearly neither is your niece. I don't think you are in any position to make demands.
Macon's expression changed slightly. He turned his ring around on his finger.
Mrs. Lincoln, I appreciate your candor, and I will try to be as frank with you as you have been with me. It would be a grave error for you, for anyone in this town, really, to pursue this matter. You see, I have a great deal of means. I'm a bit of a spendthrift, if you will. If you try to prevent my niece from returning to Stonewall Jackson High School, I will be forced to spend some of that money. Who knows? Perhaps I'll bring in a Walmart.
There was another gasp from the bleachers.
Is that a threat?
Not at all. Quite coincidentally, I also own the land upon which the Southern Comfort Hotel resides. Its closure would be most inconvenient for you, Mrs. Snow, as your husband would have to drive a great deal farther to meet his lady friends, which I'm sure would make him late for supper on a regular basis. Now, we couldn't have that, could we?
Mr. Snow turned beet red and scrunched down behind a couple of guys on the football team, but Macon was just getting started.
And Mr. Hollingsworth, you look very familiar, sir, as does that striking Confederate flower to your left.
Macon gestured to the lady from the school board sitting next to him.
Haven't I seen you two somewhere before? I could swear.
Mr. Hollingsworth swayed a little.
Absolutely not, Mr. Ravenwood. I am a married man.
Macon turned his attention to the balding man sitting on the other side of Mr. Hollingsworth.
And Mr. Ebbett, if I decide to stop leasing the land to the wayward dog, where will you spend the evenings drinking when your wife thinks you're studying at the Good Book Bible Group?
Wilson, how could you? To use our Lord Almighty as an alibi? You will burn in the fires of hell, sure as I'm standing here.
Mrs. Ebbett collected her purse and started to push her way toward the aisle.
It's not true, Rosalie.
Isn't it, though?
Macon smiled.
I can't even imagine what Boo here would tell me if he could talk. You know, he's been in and out of every yard and parking lot in your fair town, and I'll bet he's seen a thing or two.
I stifled a laugh. Boo's ears perked up at the sound of his name, and more than a few people started to squirm in their seats, as if Boo might open his mouth and start talking. After Halloween night, it wouldn't have surprised me, and considering Macon Ravenwood's reputation, nobody in Gatlin would have been too shocked either.
As you can see, there are more than a few people in this town who are less than honest. So you can imagine my concern when I learned that four teenage girls are the only witnesses to these scathing accusations made against my own family. Wouldn't it be in all of our interests to drop this matter? Wouldn't it be the gentlemanly thing to do, sir?
Mr. Hollingsworth looked like he was going to be sick, and the woman next to him looked like she was hoping she'd get sucked down into the ground. Mr. Ebbett, whose name I realized was never mentioned before Macon said it, had already left, chasing after his wife. The remaining members of the tribunal looked scared to death, as if any minute now Macon Ravenwood or his dog might start telling the whole town their dirty little secrets.
I think you might be right, Mr. Ravenwood. Perhaps we need to investigate these accusations further before pursuing this matter. There may, in fact, be inconsistencies.
A wise choice, Mr. Hollingsworth. A very wise choice.
Macon walked toward the tiny table where Lena was sitting and offered his arm.
Come now, Lena. It's late. You have school tomorrow.
Lena stood up, standing even straighter than usual. The rain faded to a gentle patter. Marion tied a scarf around her hair, and the three of them walked back up the aisle, Boo trailing behind them. They didn't look at anyone else in the room. Mrs. Lincoln was on her feet.
Her mother is a murderer,
she screamed, pointing at Lena. Macon spun around and their eyes met. There was something about his expression. It was the same expression he'd had when I showed him Genevieve's locket. Boo growled menacingly.
Be careful, Martha. You never know when we'll run into each other again.
Oh, but I do, Macon. She smiled, but it was nothing like a smile. I don't know what passed between them, but it didn't look like Macon was just battling Mrs. Lincoln anymore. Marion opened her umbrella again, even though they weren't outside yet. She smiled diplomatically at the crowd.
Now, I hope to see all of you at the library. Don't forget, we're open till 6 o'clock on the weekdays.
She nodded to the room.
Without libraries, what have we? We have no past and no future.
Just ask Ray Bradbury, or go to Charlotte and read it for yourself on the wall of the public library. Macon took Marion's arm, but she wasn't finished.
And he didn't go to Harvard either, Mrs. Lincoln. He didn't even go to college.
With that, they were gone. December 19th. White Christmas. After the disciplinary committee meeting, I don't think anyone believed Lena would show up at school the next day. But she did, just like I knew she would. No one else knew she had given up the right to go to school once. She wasn't going to let anyone take it away from her again. To everyone else, school was prison. To Lena, it was freedom. Only it didn't matter because that was the day Lena became a ghost at Jackson. Nobody looked at her, spoke to her, sat near her at any table, bleacher, or desk. By Thursday, half the kids at school were wearing the Jackson Angels t-shirt with those white wings on their backs. The way they looked at her, it seemed half the teachers wished they could wear them too. On Friday, I turned in my basketball jersey. It just didn't feel like we were all on the same team anymore. Coach was furious. After all the hollering died down, he just shook his head.
You're crazy, Waite. Look at the season you're having, and you're throwing it away on some girl?
I could hear it in his voice. Some girl. Old man Ravenwood's niece. Still, nobody said an unkind word to either one of us, at least not to our faces. If Mrs. Lincoln had put the fear of God into them, Macon Ravenwood had given people in Gatlin a reason to fear something even worse. The truth. As I watched the numbers on Lena's wall and hand get smaller and smaller, the possibility became more real. What if we couldn't stop it? What if Lena had been right all along, and after her birthday the girl I knew disappeared? Like she had never been here at all. All we had was the Book of Moons, and more, there was one thought I was trying to keep out of Lena's head, and mine. I wasn't sure the book was enough. Amongst persons of power, there being twin forces from which spring all magic, the darkness and the light.
I think we've got the whole darkness and light thing worked out. You think we could get to the good part? The part called loopholes for your claiming day? How to vanquish a rogue cataclyst? How to reverse the passage of time?
I was frustrated, and Lena wasn't talking. From where we sat on the cold bleachers, the school looked deserted. We were supposed to be at the science fair, watching Alice Milkhouse soak an egg in vinegar, listening to Jackson Freeman argue there was no such thing as global warming, and Annie Honeycutt counter with how to make Jackson a green school. Maybe the angels were going to have to start recycling their flyers. I stared at the Algebra 2 book hanging out of my backpack. It didn't seem like there was anything worth learning at this place anymore. I'd learned enough in the last few months. Lena was a million miles away, still buried in the book. I had started carrying it around in my backpack, out of fear Amma would find it if I left it in my room. Here's more about cataclysts. The greatest of the darkness being the power closest to the world and the underworld, the cataclyst. The greatest of the light being the power closest to the world and the underworld, the natural. Where there is not one, there cannot be the other, as without darkness, there can be no light.
See? You're not going dark. You're light because you're the natural.
Lena shook her head and pointed at the next paragraph. Not necessarily. That's what my uncle thinks, but listen to this. At the time of claiming, the truth will be made manifest. What appears darkness may be the greatest light. What appears light may be the greatest darkness.
She was right. There was no way to be sure.
Then it gets really complicated. I'm not even sure I understand the words. For the dark matter made the dark fire, and the dark fire made the powers of all Lilum in the demon world and casters of darkness and light. Without all power, there can be no power. The dark fire made the great darkness and the great light. All power is dark power, as dark power is even the light.
Dark matter, dark fire, what is this, the Big Bang for casters?
What about Lilum? I've never heard of any of this, but then again, nobody tells me anything. I didn't even know my own mother was alive. She tried to sound sarcastic, but I could hear the pain in her voice.
Maybe Lilum is an old word for casters or something.
The more I find out, the less I understand. And the less time we have. Don't say that. The bell rang and I stood up.
You coming?
She shook her head. I'm going to stay out here a while longer. Alone, in the cold. More and more it was like that. She hadn't even looked me in the eye since the disciplinary committee meeting, almost as if I were one of them. I couldn't really blame her, considering the whole school and half the town had basically decided she was the institutionalized bipolar child of a murderer.
You better show up in class sooner or later. Don't give Principal Harper any more ammunition.
She looked back toward the building. I don't see how it matters now. For the rest of the afternoon, she was nowhere to be found. At least, if she was, she wasn't listening. In chemistry, she wasn't there for our quiz on the periodic table.
You're not dark, El. I would know.
In history, she wasn't there while we reenacted the Lincoln-Douglas debate, and Mr. Lee tried to make me argue the pro-slavery side, most likely as punishment for some future liberally-minded paper I was bound to write.
Don't let them get to you like this. They don't matter.
In ASL, she wasn't there while I had to stand up in front of the class and sign Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, while the rest of the basketball team just sat there smirking.
I'm not going anywhere, El. You can't shut me out. That's when I realized she could. By lunch, I couldn't take it anymore. I waited for her to come out of Trig, and I pulled her over to the side of the hall, dropping my backpack to the floor. I took her face in my hands and drew her into me.
Ethan, what are you doing?
This. I pulled her face into mine with both hands. When our lips touched, I could feel the warmth from my body seep into the coldness of hers. I could feel her body melting into mine, the inexplicable pull that had bound us together from the beginning, bringing us together again. Lena dropped her books and wrapped her arms around my neck, responding to my touch. I was becoming lightheaded. The bell rang. She pushed away from me, gasping. I bent down to pick up her copy of Bukowski's Pleasures of the Damned and her battered spiral notebook. The notebook was practically falling apart, but then again, she'd had a lot to write about lately.
You shouldn't have done that. Why not? You're my girlfriend, and I miss you. 54 days, Ethan. That's all I have. It's time to stop pretending we can change things. It'll be easier if we both accept it.
There was something about the way she said it, like she was talking about more than just her birthday. She was talking about other things we couldn't change. She turned away, but I caught her arm before she could turn her back on me. If she was saying what I thought she was saying, I wanted her to look at me when she said it. What do you mean, El? I almost couldn't ask. She looked away.
Ethan, I know you think this can have a happy ending, and for a while, maybe I did too. But we don't live in the same world, and in mine, wanting something badly enough won't make it happen.
She wouldn't look at me.
We're just too different.
Now we're too different. After everything we've been through? My voice was getting louder. A couple of people turned and stared at me. They didn't even look at Lena.
We are different. You're a mortal, and I'm a caster, and those worlds might intersect, but they'll never be the same. We aren't meant to live in both.
What she was saying was she wasn't meant to live in both. Emily and Savannah, the basketball team, Mrs. Lincoln, Mr. Harper, the Jackson Angels, they were all finally getting what they wanted.
This is about the disciplinary meeting, isn't it? Don't let them. It isn't just about the meeting. It's everything. I don't belong here, Ethan. And you do.
So now I'm one of them. Is that what you're saying? She closed her eyes and I could almost see her thoughts tangled up in her mind.
I'm not saying you're like them, but you are one of them. This is where you've lived your whole life, and after this is all over, after I'm claimed, you're still going to be here. You're going to have to walk down these halls and those streets again, and I probably won't be there. But you will, for who knows how long, and you said it yourself. People in Gatlin never forget anything.
2 years.
What?
That's how long I'll be here.
2 years is a long time to be invisible. Trust me, I know.
For a minute, neither of us said anything. She just stood there, pulling shreds of paper from the wire spine of her notebook.
I'm tired of fighting it. I'm tired of trying to pretend I'm normal.
You can't give up. Not now. Not after everything. You can't let them win.
They already have. They won the day I broke the window in English.
There was something about her voice that told me she was giving up on more than just Jackson.
Are you breaking up with me?
I was holding my breath.
Please, don't make this harder. It's not what I want either.
Then don't do it.
I couldn't breathe. I couldn't think.
It was like time had stopped again, the way it had at Thanksgiving dinner. Only this time,
It wasn't magic. It was the opposite of magic. I just think things will be easier this way. It doesn't change the way I feel about you. She looked up at me, her big green eyes sparkling with tears. Then she turned and fled down a hallway that was so quiet you could have heard a pencil drop.
Merry Christmas, Lena.
But there was nothing to hear. She was gone, and that wasn't something I would have been ready for. Not in 53 days, not in 53 years, not in 53 centuries. 53 minutes later, I sat alone, staring out the window, which was a statement right there, considering how crowded the lunchroom was. Gatlin was gray. The clouds had drifted in. I wouldn't call it a storm, exactly. It hadn't snowed in years. If we were lucky, we got a flurry or two, maybe once a year. But it hadn't snowed a single day since I was 12. I wished it would snow. I wished I could hit rewind and be back in the hallway with Lena. I wished I could tell her I didn't care if everyone in this town hated me, because it didn't matter. I was lost before I found her in my dreams, and she found me that day in the rain. I knew it seemed like I was always the one trying to save Lena, but the truth was, she had saved me, and I wasn't ready for her to stop now.
Hey, man.
Link slid onto the bench across from me at the empty table.
Where's Lena? I wanted to thank her.
For what? Link pulled a piece of folded notebook paper out of his pocket.
She wrote me a song. Pretty cool, huh?
I couldn't even look at it. She was talking to Link, just not to me. Link grabbed a slice of my untouched pizza.
Listen, I got a favor to ask you.
Sure. What do you need?
Ridley and I are going up to New York after break. If anyone asks, I'm at church camp in Savannah, far as you know.
There's no church camp in Savannah.
Yeah, but my mom doesn't know that. I told her I signed up because they have some kind of Baptist rock band.
And she believed that.
She's been acting a little weird lately. But what do I care? She said I could go.
It doesn't matter what your mom said, you can't go. There are things you don't know about Ridley. She's dangerous. Stuff could happen to you. His eyes lit up. I had never seen Link like this. Then again, I hadn't seen him too much lately. I'd been spending all my time with Lena, or thinking about Lena, the book, her birthday. The stuff my world revolved around now. Or did. Until an hour ago.
That's what I'm hoping. Besides, I got it bad for that girl. She really does something to me, you know?
He took the last slice of pizza off my tray. For a second, I considered telling Link everything, just like the old days, about Lena and her family, Ridley, Genevieve, and Ethan Carter Waite. Link had known everything in the beginning, but I didn't know if he would believe the rest, or if he could. Some things were just asking too much, even from your best friend. Right now, I couldn't risk losing Link, too. But I had to do something. I couldn't let him go to New York or anywhere else with Ridley.
Listen, man. You've gotta trust me. Don't get mixed up with her. She's just using you. You're gonna get hurt.
He crushed a Coke can in his hand.
Oh, I get it. If the hottest girl in town is hanging out with me, she must be using me. I guess you think you're the only one who can pull a hot chick? When did you get so full of yourself?
That's not what I'm saying. Link got up.
I think we both know what you're saying. Forget I asked.
It was too late. Ridley had already gotten to him. Nothing I said was going to change his mind, and I couldn't lose my girlfriend and my best friend in the same day.
Listen, I didn't mean it like that. I won't say anything.
Not like your mom is speaking to me anyway.
It's cool. It's gotta be hard to have a best friend who's good-looking and as talented as me.
Link took the cookie off my tray and broke it in half. It might as well have been the dirty Twinkie off the floor of the bus. It was over. It would take a lot more than a girl, even a siren, to come between us. Emily was eyeing him.
You'd better go before Emily rats you out to your mom. Then you won't be going to any church camp, real or imaginary. I'm not worried about her.
But he was. He didn't want to be stuck in the house with his mom the whole winter break. And he didn't want to be frozen out by the team, by everyone at Jackson, even if he was too stupid or too loyal to realize it. On Monday, I helped Amma bring the boxes of holiday decorations down from the attic. The dust made my eyes water. At least, that's what I told myself. I found a whole little town, lit by little white lights, that my mom used to lay out every year under the Christmas tree, on a piece of cotton we pretended was snow. The houses were her grandmother's, and she had loved them so much that I had loved them, even though they were made of flimsy cardboard, glue, and glitter, and half the time they fell over when I tried to stand them up.
Old things are better than new things, because they've got stories in them, Ethan.
She would hold up an old tin car and say,
Imagine my great-grandmother playing with this same car, arranging this same town under her tree, just like we are now.
I hadn't seen the town since... when? Since I'd seen my mom, at least. It looked smaller than before. The cardboard more warped and tattered. I couldn't find the people in any of the boxes or even the animals. The town looked lonely, and it made me sad. Somehow the magic was gone, without her. I found myself reaching for Lena in spite of everything.
Everything's missing. The boxes are there, but it's all wrong. She's not here. It's not even a town anymore. And she's never going to meet you.
But there was no response. Lena had vanished, or banished me. I didn't know which was worse. I really was alone. And the only thing worse than being alone was having everyone else see how lonely you were. So I went to the only place in town where I knew I wouldn't run into anyone. The Gatlin County Library.
Aunt Marion?
The library was freezing and completely empty, as usual. After the way the disciplinary committee meeting had gone, I was guessing Marion hadn't had any visitors.
I'm back here!
She was sitting on the floor in her overcoat, waist high amidst a pile of open books, as if they had just fallen off the shelves around her. She was holding a book, reading aloud, in one of her familiar book trances.
We see him come and know him ours, who with his sunshine and his showers turns all the patient ground to flowers. The darling of the world is come.
She closed the book. Robert Herrick. It's a Christmas carol, sung for the king at Whitehall Palace. She sounded as far away as Lena had been lately, and I felt now.
Sorry, don't know the guy.
It was so